The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Since 2012, Darcy Weir, who resides in Alberta, Edmonton, Canada, has been on a mission to bring the world's most captivating mysteries, such as UAPs, UFOs, ETs, cryptids, and beyond, into the global spotlight through his talents as a filmmaker. During the course of his 13-year-long career, Weir has produced a remarkable 20 productions, 18 feature-length documentaries, and two TV docuseries, each accessible on Amazon Prime and Apple. Weir's goal is to shine a new light, on these enigmatic topics, thus making the information about them more accessible to the general public. Through his diverse, gripping, and well-researched films and TV presentations, Darcy Weir has become both a well-respected and high-profile voice within the global disclosure movement. His goal is to share the amazing findings he has discovered during the course of his very successful filmmaking career. And so we are honored to have him on the show with us today. Welcome to the show, Darcy.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. And have all your productions been solely on the UFO topic?
No, I've done two on the cryptid, well known as Bigfoot, also Sasquatch, and I did one on Bitcoin cryptocurrency called the Bitcoin Field Guide. But yeah, many of them have been UFO related.
Okay. You say Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about Bitcoin.
Well, it's a store of wealth. I think in the digital age, people refer to it as digital gold because of its scarcity. And because there's a finite amount of it, when demand goes up, the value of it goes up. Right now, I think there's only ever going to be access to about 18 million. The original number was supposed to be around 21 million to ever be minted. And that's why it sits at a value at around 100,000 right now, because Wall Street, sovereign nations, and, you know, corporate world, and then retail private individuals are interested in owning it now to, you know, own a little something new that's an investment strategy. And it was created to combat the ever-inflating and devaluing fiat currency system that the you know, Fed and international banking systems were using as their worldwide sort of currency. And it really rose out of the ashes of 2008, the great financial crisis. Crypto cypherpunks, Hal Finney and possibly a couple other guys banded together, and they created Bitcoin. And it has since 2008 rose in popularity, and it really was the first cryptocurrency to gain mass appeal and attention. And now there's, you know, a million different cryptos out there competing for viability and interest. And it's a whole new market to invest in, you know, people can buy stocks, which are equities, they're portions of the value of a company, or they can go on crypto trading markets and they can buy cryptocurrencies, which are, you know, essentially they're kind of like equities, digital equities in these rising Web3 crypto companies that are trying to address certain innovations in Web3, Ethereum being one. People consider that like world computer, and it's a new layer of internet that people are building applications on and trading value with.
Okay, it was my understanding, tell me if I'm mistaken, that Bitcoin cryptocurrency was simply you write it down on paper and I'll sell it to you for $1,000, and then you could sell it for $2,000 a piece of paper, and that's the value of it. Is that piece of paper? Is that correct?
That's very far from correct.
Okay.
Essentially, Bitcoin is a blockchain technology, so. The reason why, you know, what you're talking about essentially was the original version of like a banknote, which got replaced by cash eventually, right? Dollars. It was kind of like an IOU that the bank would give somebody in exchange for them saying they're going to pay them back. But the whole banking system essentially is like a ledger. It's an accounting organization with people employed under it that are keeping track of value that you've generated through your work and then helping you store that value and trade that value and invest that value, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin kind of replaces the banking system. So what you need first is a crypto wallet, something like an online wallet with Coinbase or Binance, or, you know, there's so many different online wallets that you can own. But then you can also have an offline wallet, like a ledger, a little crypto application that's built into like a USB. And once you have a digital wallet, you can buy either a whole Bitcoin or a fraction of a Bitcoin. And it's all the accounting system. It's an open ledger, so you can actually track the transactions online.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all stored, like the accounting system and the value itself, like how many US dollars that you have in Bitcoin, all that stuff, including the KYC, know your client, like your identity and whose identity previously owned it, is stored in this open ledger. So it's like a banking system and a value monetary system that replaces the need for a bank and the accounting systems that are based within the bank, the personnel and everything, it's all built into the cryptography of the digital token. So that's why when it first came out, guys like Warren Buffett were saying, oh, it's a scam. You don't want to use that. It's, you know, but now it's worth $100,000 US per coin. So I think he was wrong.
So things have changed.
Things have changed.
So your latest production is called The Psychic Phenomenon, and it's on Prime Video. And what's the connection between psychic phenomenon and UFOs?
I think there's a really strong connection because it's something that is constantly reported through experiencer testimony, people that have seen UFOs or sometimes allegedly made contact with the occupants of these craft. Mm-hmm. They always report things like telepathy, for example, which is a psychic phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at, you know, the history of remote viewing, which is a structured sort of controlled study of psychic abilities that the CIA, like the intelligence and the military agencies at one time employed to gain better data over their adversaries in the past. When you look at that controlled study, the Stargate program, what Russell Targ had done and Hal Puthoff and all these guys that were involved in that, essentially it shows that psychic abilities are real, mm-hmm. and that the powers that be are interested in using that as a tool, as an advantage to understand things better. And so with that being said, apparently UFO targets, anomalous targets, were common practice or sought after thing to gain more data on from the intelligence and the military apparatus of the United States of America.
So you're talking about the remote viewing project, there?
Yes. Yeah, Stargate project, which spanned like two decades and was funded by millions and millions of dollars through the military and the government.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of these remote viewers were able to say, hey, I see a cave or a underground base, and I see UFOs, or I see this type of craft, I see this type of being. And one psychic viewer would coordinate with another and come up to say the same thing. And whether they were believers in, before that or not, they came up with pretty much the same thing. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can look at a famous 1984 paper that's actually on the online. It's on the CIA's website, from a remote viewing session that Joe McMonagle carried out, targeting the ancient Cydonia site on Mars, which Richard C. Hoagland started pointing attention to from the Viking missions, with the face on Mars and apparently structures that look like pyramids. When he was targeted with that location by the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, he saw what looked like giant non-human intelligence that were there at one point millions of years ago. And they had technology, there was a cataclysmic event, you know, all kinds of stuff ensued that eventually they abandoned Mars and apparently came to Earth. So he speculated that maybe we are descendants of a you know, progenitor non-human race or something.
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots of targets like that. And they were all carried out over those two decades by multiple different people. Ingo Swann looked at the moon. He said he saw green men mining on the dark side of the moon. Really interesting stuff.
There were green men?
Apparently.
Yeah, because that's become a joke now. They're little green men, you know?
Yeah, I know. But it's something he said he saw. And the interesting thing about when he remote viewed that target, the beings that were there, you know, carrying out some kind of activity out of sight, did not appreciate his intrusion, and they warded him off psychically, apparently. He was never allowed to go back to that location again, and he had no problem remote viewing sites over and over before that. He also kind of said that he was being stalked or sort of harassed after that, and he felt, I would say, he was one of these people early on that kind of reported the hitchhiker effect, which has now become famous from the NIDS team studies that were done over at Skinwalker Ranch and are still being carried out there today.
Right, right. That's quite the series, isn't it, Skinwalker?
It's a fun one.
Do you find the people that you have interviewed, how do they look at the Skinwalker? How do they view the Skinwalker Ranch series?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a mixed bag, right? There's a lot of sort of made for TV sensationalism and sort of experiments with rockets and stuff like that that look a bit more hokey than UFO or anomaly related, but people seem to really appreciate Tim, you know, what's his name, Taylor. It seems that they always have a vast cast and crew that visit the ranch. So yeah, I think there's interest. It's one of History Channel's best performing shows, right? Yeah. But of course there's people that are skeptical about whether they're really finding anything anomalous. You look at guys like Green Street, and he's tried to debunk it outright. So,
well, there's always going to be people trying to debunk it. I need to take just a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, your host, and we're speaking with filmmaker Darcy Weir. And Darcy, I watched one of your documentaries on the Puerto Rico UFO case. Would you tell our listeners about that case?
Yeah, sure. Puerto Rico is a pretty interesting location on the planet. It is a colony now of the United States. People that are born there can, you know, travel to the U.S. and work. So they're considered residents and part of your domain, your dominion. And I learned of the anomalies and the history of strange things happening in Puerto Rico through a friend named Andy Marciel, who's actually a born and raised Puerto Rican. He was featured in a documentary I did called Transmedium, where I explored the history of USO activity and a possible Navy cover-up of the Fast Mover program, where they were like cataloging these types of incidents around the oceans. USOs is unidentified submerged objects. And Puerto Rico came up actually in conversation during that documentary from a MUFON analyst and researcher named Mark D'Antonio. And then Andy and I, when I finished interviewing him for that documentary, he basically said, like, I would love to go to Puerto Rico and investigate the history of USOs and all kinds of phenomenon around the island there. So I stayed in touch with them. We eventually organized a trip out there. I am, you know, an English-speaking man, and he's got the Spanish side, which you need. And he also understands the history of it. I will mention that we got connected to Jorge Martin, who, if people don't know who that is, he's basically like the George Knapp of UFO researchers out in Puerto Rico. He's been covering the beat for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. And when I connected with Jorge, he made intros for me to meet with experiencers that were all around the island. So we got to meet with the CBP, Customs Border Patrol, experiencer of the Aguadilla 2013 object, the Department of Homeland Security's leaked UAP video. Mm-hmm. And when we met with that agent, we got the whole backstory of how that was filmed and how the agency reacted after the leak and how things changed on the island regarding the UAP issue. And
when you say, when you say things changed on the island, changed from what to what?
Well, security procedures totally changed. So the agent for CBP that leaked that video was no longer allowed to walk into certain areas to communicate with certain agent areas. He wasn't allowed on the planes again. The FBI got involved. They sequestered information and apparently kept it from the public for as long as they could. It's an interesting case that they basically, Department of Homeland Security themselves, they created really strict rules on sharing data between departments after that leak. If you listen to things like Ross Coulthart covered from News Nation when he inquired, and with regards to that area, which is the Rafael Hernandez International Airport on the west coast of Puerto Rico, there's just been all kinds of sightings and strange things off the coast there in the water, and fishermen are no longer able to access that side near the beach. It's been basically closed off from the public.
So if there was nothing to that that event, those leaked videos, etc., why would they make such a stink over it? Why would they go that as far as they have?
Exactly. And what people can look up if they want to see further information, I mean, Department of Homeland Security themselves released in August of 2023 a drove of documents on UAP. This was around the time that it was requested by the president to start, you know, agencies start releasing their information. Mm-hmm. And DHS followed through with that. In that documentation, they say straight up, the 2013 Aguadilla incident and object is anomalous, and they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. That should be important in history and for the public to take note in, because these are trained observers. They're used to tracking cartel craft, you know, illegal immigrant craft and activity all around the borders of the United States, including the ocean coasts. And Puerto Rico is an important place for DHS because you have Dominicans and multiple other types of nations that are in that area trying to, you know, Cubans trying to get into Puerto Rico or into the United States through there. So they have to really protect that border. And they're used to seeing certain types of objects. They're used to seeing birds, balloons. They know how to rule that out, right?
All right.
When that video is considered UAP, we should listen.
That's right. That's right. So tell us about the witness that you interviewed so thoroughly in Puerto Rico. Or have you been telling us about that?
Yeah, so he's a really interesting man. He was interested in the UAP subject before he saw that video. Mm-hmm. And his friend, who was actually the FLIR camera operator of the plane, notified him of the anomaly right after the plane landed. So he was invited in to see the video. He was given a copy secretly. And he then took that video to Jorge Martin to then be leaked online to the public. Mm. So, you know, in speaking with him, he was the guy that gave more context to the video. He gave the backstory of how they noticed the object coming in off the ocean beforehand, and that no ground crew at the airport and none of the air traffic controllers could see it with their naked eye. So it seemed as if it was cloaked, because they would have seen a balloon, right? Mm-hmm. If it was a balloon floating around in the air, like a Mylar balloon or something that people like Mick West have said it is. And the FLIR camera operator asked if the pilots or anybody on board the craft could see with their naked eye. Again, no. So that's a common sort of issue with UAP or UFO. Throughout history, people have said that it seems these things can stay in a light spectrum that our eyes can't detect. Right.
Right. Right.
And that's why FLIR is an important tool, because it's able to see things better than we can.
Right.
The FLIR camera operator asked the personnel. They said no. And then that's how we got the recording. They started recording and following it for about 4 minutes. 4 minutes is pretty substantial. If you look at FLIR videos that have now become famous, like the Tic Tac, the Go Fast, the Gimbal, they're very short segments. We do see like a heads-up display. We do hear sometimes personnel commenting on what they're tracking. But with this video, because it's so long, you get all that heads-up display information, and then you get testimony like the leaker who, you know, understood that this definitely couldn't have been a bird, it couldn't have been a Mylar balloon, and DHS themselves thought it was strange.
Well, what is the leaker, the resident of Puerto Rico, just the average man?
Yeah, he's somebody who worked on location at the airport in security.
Okay, he wasn't like a pilot or a colonel. No. And wasn't he also an experiencer, alien experiencer, or claimed to be?
He was not. He was okay. Not. No.
I thought that I understood that someone there said that they contacted him, ET contacted him.
So, yeah, later in the documentary, we actually met with an experiencer named Andres Maldonado.
Okay.
And this individual had a contact experience with a human-looking non-human, apparently, named... what is
difficult name, huh?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the ET, let's say, is escaping me right now. But his dad apparently had some kind of contact history. He had some kind of contact history. And there's other people that are on the island of Puerto Rico that also met this individual. And that individual basically was meeting with these people, telling them that there's going to be sort of a cataclysmic, destructive event in the in world history in the future, and just kind of warning about our place in the universe, and pretty common sort of message that we've gotten throughout the sort of contact history. But yeah, this individual's name was Amaron, apparently.
Okay.
And wasn't like a Puerto Rican. They described him as looking more like a Hindu or Indian sort of man.
Okay. We're not talking about ET now.
Well, yeah, no, his look physically appeared to look like a dark-skinned, you know, of Indian descent sort of man.
Okay.
But he identified himself coming from another planet.
Okay. So yeah. ET kind of looked like a East Indian.
Pretty much.
Yeah, wow. Would we consider that Nordic?
Nordics historically have a blonde, blue-eyed, and white-skinned appearance. So no, we wouldn't consider that. That's a thing. It's sort of an anomaly in the history of reporting non-human intelligence contact, right? That's why I included it. It's so different. And I think it appeals to sort of the idea of Jacques Vallée's examples, that the phenomenon presents itself based on the consciousness of the contactee.
Mm-hmm. Now, I apologize. I don't have the name of that documentary. What was the name of that documentary that had all that info?
Yeah, people can watch it for free on my YouTube channel right now. Actually, it's called Puerto Rico's UAP.
Puerto Rico's UAP.
And my YouTube channel is at Occult Journeys.
At Occult Journeys. At meaning AT,
the at symbol. Yeah, if you want to search it that way, it'll pull up my page.
Okay, at occultjourneys.com. All right. That was an excellent one, by the way.
Now, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Claim to have seen all of your work, it's 20. You've done 20 videos, 20 documentaries.
Yeah. So about just over 18 feature length documentaries now, and two docu series. I did a docu basically to make for film to be considered a feature. It usually has to be, as my friend Dean Alioto recently reminded me, over 46 minutes. So all of my features have definitely been either an hour or longer. And then I did two docu-series, one on the Pascagoula 1973 abduction event with Charlie Hixon and Calvin Parker. That's called Pascagoula 73. You can watch it for free on YouTube. Through YouTube Movies or on Amazon Prime in the UK. Mm-hmm. And that was a four-part docu-series. Each episode is about an hour long. And we cover Philip Mantle, the head researcher of that story, that's written many books on the story. And in other episodes, we cover Charlie Hixon's experience, Calvin Parker's unique experience, and then some new abductees that came forward, Maria and Jerry Blair, that said that they were taken the same night on the river, Mississippi River there, Pascagoula. So that's one docu-series. Another one's called Dark Alliance. And we kind of took a dive into the secret space program reporting from some certain people that came out of the fame of the Gaia TV network. And we analyze whether their claims are true and what kind of activity they were carrying out when they were rising to fame in the UFO community. And that's a two-part docu-series. Each episode is about an hour and a half.
And you say it's Prime Video in the UK. Is it UK or in Canada?
Well, yeah, my films are distributed internationally. Okay. Some of them are, you know, the reason why I mentioned the UK for Pascagoula 73 is because if you have Amazon Prime in the UK, it's free to watch. Kind of like if you have a Netflix subscription, certain, like all the content that's offered on Netflix is free with your subscription. That docu-series is free in the UK through Prime Video. And some of my documentaries are free in the United States through Prime Video, like the Secret Space UFOs series that I did.
Okay. Let me take another moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with a film producer, Mr. Darcy Weir. And let's see. So without, you know, giving a spoiler alert here, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with the Pascagoula event, give us a rundown of that, right?
Well, yeah, I was curious about that, just like you are, whether it was a real event or, you know, anything happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember reading a long time ago about how two men in 1973, it was the night of October 11th, were fishing on the Pascagoula River in Mississippi, and they apparently were taken without their consent on board a craft, and they were examined. A physical examination was undertook of their bodies, and then they were safely deposited back on the riverbank where they were originally. And then they went into town to report what happened to them to the police. And the rest is kind of history. The two men are Calvin Parker, Charlie Hixon. Calvin Parker was only 19 years old, 18, 19 when this happened. And Charlie Hixon was 41. So there was quite an age difference.
Yeah.
They were family friends. And I think what's interesting about the documentary, you'll see if people want to watch that for free on YouTube or, you know, some other place, Roku, if they have it. Essentially, these men didn't have a past of lying to the public. They reported in, you know, honest and non-exploitative ways. They were interviewed by the police secretly, and the police later revealed those secret tapes that they recorded of the men kind of losing their minds in the police station after this happened, the event happened to them. They were kind of going through a bit of PTSD, let's say. But, you know, fast forward to now, we now know that there were many, many, many witnesses to the UFO phenomenon in the skies nights before and many nights after this supposed abduction event happened. And we kind of put that all into the documentary. We just presented as much we could around what happened leading up to, after, and all the testimony from the folks involved.
Are you Pascagoula now? What state is this in?
That's in Mississippi.
Mississippi. Are you aware of any UFO activity or alien abduction activity going on in that area today?
I have not really paid attention to that, so no.
Okay.
I do know that Alabama is nearby, and this is where many people, you know, Rocket City, they have said that anti-gravity research has been carried out there for decades. So could people have been seeing some of those test flights back in the 1970s? Maybe.
That seems a little odd from 1970s to today. If they were experimenting with anti-gravity back then, or even in the 1990s, don't you think we'd have it today?
I don't think we would have it
because,
because I think that's the type of technology that's not supposed to be public. It's definitely something that would change our energy paradigm if the whole public knew that we had that ability, you know, instead of using fossil fuels and the typical energy paradigm that we use right now, like nuclear energy, coal, oil and gas.
Right. They don't even want us to use solar or wind.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, there's a CIA paper that a friend of mine, Tyler Zarotnik, published, I think comes from some archives, CIA archives, but they said that there was a standing order in the 1970s, literally, right up to the 90s, that any solar panels that were more than 20% efficient were to be deemed off the market, illegal. And if the intelligence agencies were intercepting innovation like that, why wouldn't they intercept anti-gravity or some other sort of zero point free energy type devices from ever the public catching wind of it?
Have you come across anyone who claims that they were or knew someone that had been experimenting with this type of thing?
Well, I mean, there's many people over history that have come forward. There's the John Searle, Searle effect generator. This is a British man that claimed he built this relatively small device, maybe about a foot to a foot and a half in diameter, that could generate energy, free energy with magnets. And the British electric industry basically caught wind of this, shut him down, raided his homes, raided his business, that type of thing. That's just like an early example overseas, but people have been trying to create anti-gravitic and free energy sort of devices for a long time. Tesla, Nikola Tesla, wanted to have wireless energy that he was testing out with the Wardenclyffe Tower and J.P. Morgan's early money in the 1800s, 1900s. And, Union Oil bought all of his patents when he passed away. Why would Union Oil, a fossil fuel part of the paradigm that runs the planet, be interested in a free energy inventor?
So they could bury it, right?
So they could bury it. So they could keep it from the public eye. And I'm sure the CIA and other intelligence agencies around the world, you know, MI5, MI6, whatever, these police forces are meant to protect the economy too. And
right.
The economy, if that's destabilized in a country, that is a national security issue. So
yeah.
If you do have a technological disruptor to an economy, that could be deemed a national security threat.
So isn't the maglev trains an example of these magnets that keep going? You know what I'm saying?
I think maglev still has to have some kind of energy source to run them. And if you look at, so basically maglev stands for magnetic levitation. So you're not relying on the train to have a turbine that moves a train wheel that connects to a metal track, and it screeches on and rolls over that over miles and miles to deliver goods and people. A maglev train, like the bullet trains in Japan and stuff, what they're relying on is if you put two poles of a magnet together, you get that natural invisible force so that they're not producing friction or touching each other. They force each other away. And on an industrial scale, what they've done is created trains that hover over top of the track and don't necessarily grind against and fall off of it. So they can move at high speeds and slow down based on the magnetic push and pull. But like I said, in order for those to start moving and slowing down, they're relying on an electricity grid power. And electricity grid powers all around the world usually are nuclear energy, coal, all kinds of fossil fuel opportunities to provide energy to city trains and cities' industries. So, maglev is not considered illegal technology.
No, it's kind of hinting at it, isn't
I think it's just on the precipice of doing something very important or paradigm challenging.
All right. Now, one of the reasons given for hiding disclosure from the public eye for so many years is the perceived effect this knowledge might have on the world's religions. Now, how would you answer that?
Well, I think that is something that was considered in the past, but these days I don't think it is as much of a worry because the religions of the world just identify the phenomenon itself with their own worldview. So, for example, you look at senators and the sort of disclosure movement that's happening in Washington, D.C. right now. And when they get information about this phenomenon, they typically speak to their constituents and people as if the phenomenon should be related to demons and angels. So I think, it's not really a big deal. And in the United States alone, there are 221 million Christians. So you're going to have people look at the phenomenon with their own gaze, their own understanding of the world and the universe.
Yeah, that's the thing. They see these UFOs. They're either gods, angels of gods, or demons, the devil himself. And I say none of the above.
I agree.
But do you feel that I've asked this of many of my guests. What's your opinion? Do you think these ETs are from other planets or other dimensions?
I always thought when I first came to this subject that they were from other planets, other stars in the galaxy or universe, right? But as time goes on, my perspective has changed, and I think there's theoretically an opportunity for some of this phenomenon to be a non-human intelligence that maybe has taken root here on Earth, but lives in a different domain, like the oceans, or in a different sort of dimension that we can't even identify with our psyche or eyes, you know? And we talked a little bit about FLIR, that's forward-looking infrared video technology. We can't see in the infrared light spectrum, and it goes beyond that into the electromagnetic spectrum, much, much beyond what we can detect with our ears and eyes and nose, right?
Right.
We have a very primitive way of understanding our universe around us. And technology is catching up to identify things that exist all around us every day. Video and radar and all that type of stuff. So it's very possible there's stuff that's here that we just can't perceive. And as we get further and further down the road technologically, artificial intelligence and visual technology being incorporated into our everyday, we may start detecting these things that we just were always here that we just didn't know.
Right. I'm a great fan of History Channel's. No, it's not History Channel. Help me here. Paranormal Caught on Camera. You familiar with that?
I think I have seen some of that. Yeah, I think that's on Discovery.
Discovery, yeah. But point is, they catch a lot of ghostly apparitions with a regular camera, because it could see slightly into the infrared.
Different light spectrums, right. For sure. Yep.
But when you have infrared lens, now you got something. And you do see apparitions. What they are, don't know, but they appear to be plain and simple ghosts. Okay? So if these ghosts are dwelling on another dimension and can come through that veil to visit us, why can't other dimensional beings? Just because we can't visit their dimension doesn't mean they can't visit ours. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's very possible. And maybe a ghost is just an old word for, you know, an unidentified entity that exists in a plane that we can't visualize.
Right. Not necessarily a discarnate entity that, you know, Uncle George or Aunt Myrtle passed away and there they are right on camera. Maybe that's just another being.
Yeah. Maybe. Who knows? I'm not like a ghost hunter, but that's just where my mind goes with these sort of things.
Have you done any or attempted, thought about doing any documentaries on that subject?
Yeah, of course. It's out there on the fringe with UFOs and cryptids, so why not?
So have you done a documentary on that or just thought about it?
Thought about it.
So in that vein, are there any new documentaries that are in the works for you?
Yeah, I actually have a few projects that I'm working on. So hopefully those will be finished and published in the, you know, months and years to come.
And they are about what?
Some more stuff about UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
Some interesting stuff regarding things that have happened in the UFO community historically. Some more risque or interesting human dynamics, like a murder that has happened. And
a murder by whom? E.T.?
Can't say.
Oh, come on. Come on, Darcy.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. There's all kinds of stuff that can be covered. So I'm keeping my ear to the ground.
Throw us a bone there, Darcy.
I've thrown you tons, man. I keep some bones for myself.
Yeah. What's the point in making the documentary if you've already told us about it, right?
Exactly.
But I tell you, the documentaries that you do have out there are just fascinating. Like the, the ones that we talked about, Pascagoula. Pascagoula. What's the matter with me? And also Puerto Rico. Hey, I pronounced that properly. So yeah, they're just great. And once again, they can be seen on Prime Video and YouTube as well.
YouTube movies, yep, for free. Many of them can be seen on Roku, Apple TV. Just search my name, Darcy Weir. You can also go to my website, occultjourneys.com, and click on the poster. It'll usually take you through to a website to watch it. Tubi TV is another great platform that many of these films are free.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's Occult Journeys, at occultjourneys.com, right?
Well, occultjourneys.com to see my studio site. And if you want to follow me on places like Twitter or YouTube, at Occult Journeys.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And that's well worth watching, especially as far as I'm concerned, the Puerto Rico UFO cases is just fascinating. So we got to wrap it up, but is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
I think I'll be doing a monthly show on the Unveiled podcast, which is part of Watch Mojo. If you want to follow Rob Fliss, he's got that podcast on YouTube as well as Spotify and all the other downloadable sites. And we'll be doing a live Q&A with special guests every time we air a new sort of web documentary. So people can check us out there.
Will that be at occultjourneys.com?
You can watch some of that stuff through my YouTube or Unveiled, which is also on YouTube, part of the Watch Mojo podcast group.
Unveiled.
Yeah.
That's it. So we have to go to YouTube and search for Unveiled in there, certain, or your name.
Yep.
Darcy Weir, and that's W-E-I-R.
Yep.
Okay. Darcy Weir, I'm very happy that you were able to join us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, David Twitchell.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button, for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.